All right, guys, we have on the air right now actor extraordinaire who can be seen in the upcoming The Looming Tower on Hulu, coming out next week on February 28th. Guys, it's actor Mark Hildreth. Mark, can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can.
Mark, great to have you on Below the Belt Show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. First off, congratulations on landing a role in The Looming Tower. You're working with an incredible actor, Jeff Daniels, who's been nominated for so many awards for over the years. I mean, he's just an incredible actor. So you're actually playing a character named Gordon Wright, a counterterrorism expert. And this is a really cool premise of a series. And this is a limited series, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's based on a book called The Looming Tower, written by Lawrence Wright, which is an exhaustive book about the lead up to 9/11, the CIA, the FBI, and takes a critical look at how those agencies behaved during the few years before the 9/11 attacks. And I play Jeff Daniels plays the head of the counterterrorism unit at the FBI at the time. And I play a former Top Gun pilot who was one of the members of his team.
What I think is really interesting about the premise of this series is that the CIA and the FBI inadvertently might have set the stage for the tragedy of 9/11. So is this a little bit of a conspiracy theory, or is there actual facts behind the story of the Looming Tower?
The way I would describe it is because there is a long history, and if you read the book, you'll see that Lawrence gets quite deep into the history of how we ended up where we ended up. But it's not a series that pulls punches. No, it takes a pretty stark look at how we handled the situation, how we got ourselves there, in some cases, long relationships that we had as a country, politically and otherwise, with all kinds of people and forces. It doesn't pull punches about, whether we were doing or whether we did the right thing. And hopefully, people will find that refreshing because... It's a show that gets into the gray areas. It's not a show that's black and white. These are the good guys. Those are the bad guys.
Right.
So it's going to ask a lot of questions that are uncomfortable, to think about. It's not a show that says, here's how this group screwed up, or here's how that group screwed up. Jeff Daniels, who, like you said, he's one of the most consummate professionals and one of the people you want to see succeed because he's one of the nicest guys you can work with, and he plays his role as the head of the FBI counterterrorism unit beautifully because he's a flawed hero, and you see it right in the first episode. He's a guy who desperately wants to do the right thing and screws up sometimes, and everybody's like that, So Looming Tower gets into the gray areas of that. And hopefully we'll show sort of a human side, the human perspective of what it might have been like for some of those people who were on the ground fighting this fight back then.
Wow. So will we actually see the events of 9/11 towards, I'm guessing, towards the end of the series?
It's spooky, because the series is produced and directed by some of the best in the business. We have Emmy and Oscar winning producer, writers, directors on Looming Tower, and even in the pilot, it's spooky because you have these beautiful scenes, beautifully written, beautifully acted, beautifully shot scenes, like everything you'd expect from a great Hulu series. And then in the background, there's the towers, and it's weird because you don't think about how you don't see them anymore. Now you see New York, and the New York skyline is what it is and what it's been for the last 16, 17 years. But our show goes right back to what that was like. And so, you know, with digital special effects now, we can put them back in where they would have been. And so Everything about New York had to be meticulously recreated. And I'll tell you, I was a little bit shocked because when I went in to get my costume fittings, I was like, these look kind of old-fashioned. And they were like, yeah, they are. It was the 90s. And I was like, yeah, the 90s. Yeah, like the 90s was like not that long ago. They're like, no, the 90s is now a period piece.
It's a period piece.
It's a period piece. It's a period piece like, I don't know,
that's
like the Old West or something.
That's true.
And so I was like, that's horrifying.
It's the late 90s, though, right, Mark? It's 1998?
That's right.
Okay, 98. So I guess for maybe the years but right before 9/11. So 98 to 2001, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we get into we get into not only this isn't a show where, you know, the Americans are the only characters who are explored, and that the non-Americans, the Saudis and others, you know, are sort of this nameless, faceless villain. You know, there's long sequences that show and explore, what might have been going on for them, and and how some of these guys came to make the decisions that they made. It centers around Jeff Daniels' character and Peter Sarsgaard's character, who plays the head of the CIA counterterrorism unit. We really get into looking at the 9/11 attacks from a lot of different angles. So hopefully it'll give people really something to chew on, you know?
So incidentally, Mark, last night, I believe, on PBS on Frontline, there is a special happening or happened last night and it'll continue next week about Iran, Iraq, the United States government, Russia, and they pointed to, you know, the possibility that the United States had something to do with, you know, the instigation of the fighting between Iran and Iraq, you know, putting the chemical weapons in Saddam Hussein's hands, incidentally starting, you know, these militia wars between the two Muslim groups of people and other things that I'm not going to get into. But what is your belief system and how the United States played their hand in what's happened in the past in the Middle East?
You know, I'll tell you, my belief is that I think we need to do our due diligence. And hopefully the looming tower, at best, you know, gets people thinking and gets people interested to do their own research, to do their own looking, to look into the history of these types of things, these types of issues, and you know, find out the facts. I gotta say, in this current day and age of social media and how you can say anything you want and have an audience.
Mm-hmm.
I find it irresponsible as a generalization. You know, when a lot of times, because we're saying things we're not necessarily educated about. I don't claim to be an expert in U.S. foreign policy, you know, or in U.S. history.
Well, you are Canadian, so we can. You're off the hook on that.
I can look at it from a Canadian perspective, you know, so I can say, like, as a Canadian, some of these things are completely crazy to us, you know, the gun issues and things like that.
Yes.
Those are so much related, you know, to 9/11 directly. But I will say that the producers took pains to represent, these events that we're showing in the Looming Tower respectfully and as accurately as possible, even to the point where we had folks who were in some of those rooms, CIA and FBI agents, on set with us, shooting some of these scenes. You know, so there were scenes where I could lean over and go, like, you know, okay, cut. Okay, is that really how we would have said it? You know, was that the tone in the room? Like, what was it really like there? Because we had people who were there.
So there's a realism in authenticity of this.
You have to, I think. Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
I think it's very accurate. Yeah. From the period, the time period, to the terminology and the way everything is presented. I'm sure... those consultants, those terrorism consultants, were very, very necessary.
Absolutely, and you know, it's always an interpretation. You know, even when you see, you know, based on a true story, it's never really like it was. You know, and there's characters in the Looming Tower that are amalgamations, you know, of different people who were there, and there's some characters like Jeff Daniels' character and a number of others, Peter's character, Peter Sarsgaard, and Michael Stuhlbarg, and Alec Baldwin. Their characters are all based on, you know, real people, and you can go and you can look those folks up. Some of us, you know, were amalgamations of a variety of different characters.
Ah, okay.
It has to be dramatized, you know, so you can never claim that, you know, a movie or a series is what it was like. You know, we're giving a representation of it, but being accurate and being respectful and sensitive to those people that were there, and in this case, because of the subject matter, that's kind of like all of us. We all have that story. We all know where we were when the towers fell, you know?
Wow. Yes,
definitely. That's something that was really important on Looming Tower, was to be respectful of the fact that we're dealing with subject matter that's very sensitive for people.
So Al and I had a friend that was going to medical school. It was Rich, Dr. Rich.
Dr. Rich, yeah.
Was in medical school during the time at Cornell, during the 9/11 attacks, and he, all the med students had to be, you know, carted down to Lower Manhattan, and the stories that he told. My grandmother incidentally was living in New York during this period of time, and both of those people said that the smell and what they saw, they'll never forget. It was the absolute most horrific thing that these people have ever seen in their lives. It was total,
It still stands as the worst tragedy in modern times.
Annihilation.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No
awful.
Doubt.
Yeah. It was and is one of the defining moments in all world history, I believe. And it has affected everything about our lives. You know, I mean, entire departments of government were created that didn't even exist before. You know, this was a major event and something that, I mean, I remember where I was too. You know, I was in Canada at the time, and I remember, you know, I got a call and I got up, and you know, it was early on the West Coast still, and I remember watching the news and seeing the second plane hit on TV, and then you knew, you know, it wasn't an accident. And then I just got on the phone and I called everybody I knew, and a lot of people, about half the people I called, you know, were still asleep, and wouldn't have even witnessed it. It's a difficult thing to talk about, and it's painful for everyone, you know. So we have excellent actors who I think, you know, when you watch the show, you're going to see that they represented these people that they're playing as human beings, you know, people who believed in what they were doing, who, you know, maybe were wrong, maybe not, but they, you know, they were trying their best to deal with a situation that, you know, let's face it, was nearly impossible. Mm.
Where did the production take place on the Looming Tower?
Looming Tower was shot in New York.
Okay. Yeah, well.
Yeah, we shot principal photography in New York, and then we also shot in a couple of other places abroad.
Yeah, and I'm glad they stayed true to that. Sometimes they like to, you know, shoot in places like maybe Calgary, Alberta, Canada, or Vancouver,
right.
British Columbia.
In the middle of the snow, and they're supposed to be in Africa or something. it doesn't quite match up.
Right. So let's talk about your career. I mean, my gosh, you have done a ton of voiceover work, and Ellie is in studio here, has done some voiceover work before. How did you successfully transition from what seems to early in your career doing primarily voiceover work to being in front of the camera?
Well, it's interesting, and thank you for the compliment. I did start in voiceover when I was quite young, although I actually started acting first, and I trained in, acting for film and TV, but theater actually was my first. I'm a classically trained actor, and I started in theater. My first jobs were in theater, and I've always considered myself a theater actor first because that's how I was trained. But I actually started in film and TV when I was quite young. I was only about 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
And started with voiceover and then too. And, you know, I got lucky in the sense that I grew up in Vancouver. And when I started working, the industry was just starting to build there. And I had wonderful actors around me. Vancouver has a wonderful pool of actors and a whole industry of artists and professionals there. But, you know, this was around the time that Ryan Reynolds and there was a bunch of us all sort of cutting our teeth right at the beginning there, and all following, as far as I'm concerned, following the trail left by Michael J. Fox, who grew up about a half hour away from me. And yeah. I got my first agent because I walked into this office as an 8 year old and saw Michael's picture on the wall, and I was like, okay, I'll be an actor.
Very cool. That's awesome.
He was my first hero.
That's cool.
In acting. And of course, now he's done some a bunch of great voiceover work too. But I was lucky to get to do some cartoons and get into voiceover, and it's been.
Are you personally a fan of any of these? Of these projects that you did voiceover work for?
You know, I've seen them all, at least most of them. You know, some of the very early ones, I don't remember if I saw every one of them. It's been a while, but it's a fun experience because, voiceovers, I always say it's one of the best jobs in the world because it's one of the only jobs you can do in your pajamas.
That's awesome.
Right, you can wake up from bed, you don't even have to shower, your hair could be a freaking mess, and you can just
right.
roll
I love that
up
about
the studio.
Voiceover.
Yes.
Yeah. My daughter and I, we love, when I was looking through your IMDb, we've seen a lot of all the Barbie movies we've been in. We love those. I was like, oh, I know him.
And it's very funny because with voiceover, there's so many people doing so many things, and you come in and do your part. Acting's like that in general. You kind of show up after a lot of the work has already been done and then, kind of take all the credit. I'm being a little bit silly, but it's sort of true. And in voiceover, in cartoons, it's kind of like that. You know, there's so many people who have done so much work to animate this project and bring it to life and shepherd it along for years and years, many times, especially with those bigger movies. And you never know which one is going to be really popular. I did a series, the hero character in a series called Gundam Wing, and little did I know at the time it was kind of what Star Wars what Gundam Wing to Japan is kind of what Star Wars is to America.
Oh,
awesome.
Wow! Yeah,
massive franchise. I didn't even know how big it was until I actually was in Tokyo. And
we know
like
how big Star Wars
everywhere.
Is.
That's
yeah,
cool.
It was, it's cool. It's cool to be a part of it, and be part of something that. So many people find so much happiness in.
That's awesome. So did you do all of your voiceover work? Was that all when you were in Canada?
It's sort of traveled with me, and now I kind of do it all over the world.
Nice.
Cool.
I did work in Canada, for about 20 years before I started spending a little more time in the States. But now it's in the U.S. Canada, it's in London, it's all over the place.
Very cool, that's awesome.
So you choose for Vancouver to still be your home, right? As opposed to a lot of actors that have relocated to L.A. or New York.
I actually moved to the States some years ago, but I do consider Vancouver home.
Oh, okay.
It's always going to be my home. It's because that's where I was born and raised.
Nice.
And incidentally, Canada is crushing it at the Olympics this year, so
yes.
Hats off to them.
Yeah.
So you have
the
a question?
Winter Olympics is that's our every 4 years we're good. The Summer Olympics we're so, and although we've got some great Summer Olympic athletes too, but winter we really got our bases covered in the winter sports.
Mark, you're so well diversified. I mean, I wish my stock portfolio looked as good as you. I read that you taught yourself how to play Beethoven at the age of 10. What inspired you?
Yeah, it's funny, you know. I did do that. I did teach myself Beethoven when I was about 10. It's not like I, you know, it's not as if I sat down and, you know, started playing it, you know, never having played it before. It took some time, you know, as a 10-year-old. I had to work at it. But I was the grandson of two deaf grandparents. My mom's parents were both born deaf. So, you know, it's funny because they never heard a note of music in their life.
Interesting.
And I, as a child, had a sort of a natural inclination towards music. And there was a piano in our house, and nobody played it, but it was there. And so I started to mess around on it, and I taught myself to play. And, you know, I've since released two full-length original albums.
Cool.
That are available on iTunes, and I've toured in a bunch of different cities, and I've played some of the best venues in the country. You know, I love music, and it's always been my sort of my my co-passion, along with acting.
Well, next time you're on the show, we would love to hear a little ditty from you.
I know, Ashley, your awesome publicist. She should have sent us an MP3. We would have played it.
By the way,
we can certainly get you one, and you guys can
nice.
That'd be awesome.
You can always download and look me up on iTunes.
By the way, Baltimore has a great symphony, so you should come and
play.
The
BSO is fantastic, yes.
You should come play here one day, because there's a lot of classical music fans, one being myself, but you should definitely come here. It's a great...
Unfortunately, I'm going to burst your bubble, because Beethoven was the last classical song I learned.
Ah.
And that was when I was 10, so I'm sorry to disappoint. Although
you've moved on to other musical instruments.
I still play piano, but, you know, my records are, I always say the sound is sort of somewhere between, like, Elton John and Stevie Wonder.
Okay,
cool.
Kind of in that sort of realm of pop, and they've both done some amazing concerts along with symphony orchestras, so maybe there's hope.
All right. So we got a really cool movie to plug called Nellie Bly. Is that right, Mark? A psychological thriller inspired by the groundbreaking 19th century journalist who went to uncover the abuses in the treatment of women at New York's Blackwell Island Asylum. Interesting. You'll play the role of Bartholomew, and you're the love interest of Christina Ricci's character?
That's all true.
That is awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, Nellie Bly is—it's another really interesting project that has a you know, sort of a moral sort of exploration, or like a good message, you know, to put out in society. Yeah, it's also based on a true story, and it was around, I think, 1890 in New York that Nellie Bly was writing for Joseph Pulitzer. And she went undercover and pretended to be crazy, and got admitted to Blackwell Island Asylum for the mentally deranged, or whatever they called it. And she exposed abuses. This was an all women's hospital that was more like a prison. And she wrote about the abuses that she witnessed there, and it became one of the first sort of expose pieces of journalism of its kind. So it's an interesting story to tell now, given that, you know, expose journalism has really come, you know, is very much in the news, so to speak, right now. And it stars Christina Ricci and Judith Light, who's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, Judith Light.
Hopefully it'll be a good project.
That's going to be on Lifetime.
Sounds really good.
So you just wrapped that, so probably not sure on the release date for that.
Sometime this year,
fantastic.
I remember hearing about that story.
Yeah?
Yeah, I remember reading about that.
That's
happening.
Awesome.
I remember Christina Ricci hitting on me on a movie set.
Oh, Christina Ricci hit on you?
Yeah, she did. She was about 19, so she was a little young at the time.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So I'm sure Mark might have had some maybe kissing scenes with Christina Ricci.
Well, I don't kiss and tell.
Good man,
good
Mark.
Answer.
I guess we'll have to wait until this comes out.
You're going to have to wait and see. You know, awesome. I wouldn't want to give it away, but that I do play. You know, I play Christina's love interest.
And, nice.
It was really interesting to think about. You know, how to play those roles for me, because, you know, here's a story about, now this is what I would consider an actual period piece, right? 1890s, right?
Right. That
That's
is period piece.
Not
yeah.
1998. Okay.
Right.
Say it.
No. Right.
The 90s were just anyway. Yesterday.
What was Christina like, great. Though?
Christina was great. You know, she played the role beautifully, and she also produced this film. So, you know, it was a really interesting challenge to think about.
Awesome.
Like, if you got a groundbreaking female character, you know, who's really a strong person, strong enough to, you know, to go ahead and accomplish what Nellie Bly accomplished. You know, what type of a guy would she be with? You know, my contention was, like, it couldn't be just your, like, typical sort of, you know, guy who, you know, takes care of everything and is very, right. you know, manly and chivalrous and all that. I was like, he would have to be, you know, pretty progressive, too. Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't make sense. And so we got to sort of think about it like that. You know, how would that be? Because there's a dynamic between them that he... You know, he's obviously worried and concerned and doesn't know where she is, and then finally takes action. And hopefully we did it in a way that, you know, that shows how a great relationship can be, it can be a team. As opposed to, you know, the man is the hero, that kind of thing.
It's nice to talk to a guy who shared the same woman. It's pretty cool.
Oh, you and Christina, right?
Oh, I forgot
you hit on your own side.
I don't kiss and tell.
You don't kiss and tell either, right?
No,
okay.
No.
We'll talk about that one off the air, Cokie. But that's cool. We're looking forward to that. But, of course, next week, Mark, we can even see you sooner in The Looming Tower, which comes out on Hulu. And, again, thanks so much for calling in a Below the Belt show, Mark. We're excited about The Looming Tower. It looks fantastic. The trailer looks awesome. And can't wait to see it.
Congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate it. We appreciate you guys having me on, and we'll speak again sometime, maybe when I got a record out.
Yeah, that would be
awesome.
Cool. So before we let you go, Mark, if you could, let us know who you are, throw out a plug for Looming Tower, and let us know you're listening to Below the Belt Show, and then throw out whatever you want at the end.
Okay, cool. This is Mark Hildreth from The Looming Tower with Jeff Daniels and Peter Sarsgaard, premiering February 28th on Hulu. I'm listening to Below the Belt, and I hope you are too.
That's awesome. Thanks so much. Mark, thanks
cool.
for calling in. Have a good night.
Thanks,
right
Mark.
On. Thank you, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.